Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Simcast, your local source for sim racing news. Occasionally, more topics yet to be determined, depending on what we feel like talking about. Sometimes it seems it's what I'm effectively going to now call Taco Thursday, since it's U.S. week this week. And I'm of course joined by Mr. Louis Satterley.
Hashtag Taco Thursday. Eat more tacos.
Hashtag eat more tacos. We should see if we can get that trending one of these days.
One of these days we will.
One of these days. Anyway, of course, this is the Simcast, where we do occasionally talk about sim racing news.
Just occasionally.
Sometimes.
This is not one of those times.
This isn't one of those times currently. But then again, it's been so hot outside. Who can focus on anything lately?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely August hot, and it'll definitely be here until mid-September.
Mm-hmm.
The lovely month of August has started.
We'll end the weather report for tonight there.
Yeah, Jordan seems to love the U.S. weather report here.
Yes. Anyway,
And other non-sim racing news. I did finish my Lego Ferrari 488 GTE. Yeah, that was a fun build.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who was curious about it, I can tell you right now, it is the exact same size as the Lego RSR that they came out with. It's doesn't have a hood per se, so that way you can look underneath the engine cover, but it's got a clear window where you can see in where the engine is anyway, so you don't need a hood there.
Mm-hmm.
But it does still have all the other bells and whistles with the opening doors and moving engines, active steering, all that happy stuff. It was a fun build. Took me about the same amount of time.
Yes, I like the picture that you sent us, especially with the Disney Princess Funko Pops in the background.
Oh, yeah. I did it over at the lady friend's house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she did the wonderful job of buying it for me, so I figured I could build it in front of her at her house.
We'll have to...
And she did help me build it, too, so I...
Yeah. We'll have to tweet out a photo of the Ferrari after the show, but anyway.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Of course, if you want to see that picture, follow us at Simcast Radio on Twitter. Use the hashtag SimcastRSL if you have any comments or questions about anything that we talk about on tonight's show. And then, of course, as always, the four of us here on the show are members of the collective. So the main news for this week's show is that F1 2021 has been released, to much rejoicing.
I didn't even see a Facebook post about it being released yet.
Oh yeah, it was released last Friday.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. I honestly did not even see a Facebook post about it. Nobody went crazy about it or anything.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about F1 2020 or 2021. Hopefully
What's the difference?
Not much. But yeah, we'll get to that. So because Jordan and I were the two members of the show that actually did purchase F1 2021, we got together and talked about our thoughts about the game, having both played it about 10 hours so far. So we're going to go to a pre-recorded segment now. And we are now rejoined by Jordan Groves. Jordan, how are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It feels weird to be on your show for a change.
Yeah, normally I'm on your show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you guys just lock me in a room with Lewis for an hour. And
well, you're the only one who would do it.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to say something about that when he gets back. Anyway,
sure.
So Jordan, when I talk about F1 2021,
yes, yeah, we mentioned on last year's show. What year
last week's show.
I mentioned on last week's show that the game had come out on early access on Tuesday, I believe it was, and it released to everybody else on Friday.
Yes.
Which means that not only was I able to play it, but also you.
Yes.
Have you, did you play 2020?
Not really.
No, not really.
The F1 games have not been ones that I typically play that often, if that makes sense. But I figured since, you know, we're doing this show now and F1 2021 is a kind of a popular topic, I should probably, you know, play the game so I could talk about it and not just criticize it from the sidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that does always help.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is because when it comes to F1 2021 and we're coming onto my favorite subject of yearly releases again.
Oh, yeah. We can literally spend an entire hour talking about your releases.
And with the amount of times this year that I've mentioned it, it probably has totaled an hour anyway.
Probably, yeah.
I think the headline to lead with in the review of F1 2021 should be, probably for the third consecutive year, it's very similar to last year's game, but it is better.
Yeah.
I would say. On the whole, there are some things that I'm not amused by with this game in terms of content, but we'll come on to that shortly.
Yeah.
But I think that, yeah, that's the overriding thought for me, is that in most ways, F1 2021 mm-hmm. obviously is an evolution of 2020. It does improve on a lot of those things.
Yeah. I did play F1 2019 a little bit, so it's, I didn't really notice a huge change between the two, apart from like how things are set up. But I'm also, this is the first F1 game I'm playing with a wheel, so that's been a bit of a learning curve for me as well.
Because I think we spoke off the air when you first got onto the game, you were telling me that you were going to be playing it with a wheel for the first time, and we mentioned quite a lot on the show just how differently you have to drive F1 games compared to other games in order to be quick. There's mm-hmm. the fundamentals are still there. Obviously, it's a driving game. You know, the fundamentals are still going to be the same.
So you shift up, you shift down, you brake, you turn.
You flip. No, just me.
I have not managed to do that yet. Have you managed to flip a car?
It's difficult. You can't really do it that easily on F1. So if you do do it, you should be quite impressed with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So to extract pace, we mentioned it before. It's a very different kind of driving style to how you are quick in other games. How are you finding it with a steering wheel? Because obviously I've played it with a steering wheel for since 2016 now, so I'm kind of used to it. But how is it jumping now?
It's the same wheel that I'm using for, you know, everything that I drive with a wheel, because I only have the one. It is very much at a different kind of skill set, just because many of the same like triggers and vibrations that I'm used to feeling in like iRacing to kind of let me know when the back end's coming out, I'm not really getting that in F1. And I'm not sure if that's because I haven't got the settings quite right, or if the game just doesn't do that. Because I've only played about 10 hours, and at least 8 of those have been me trying to figure out the setup. Like get where I'm comfortable, figure out just the how the force feedback on F1 works, which buttons to press, because it's an F1 game, so they, at least with the Thrustmaster wheel, I don't know if this is the same for Fanatec or Logitech wheels or what have you, they label buttons based on what number it is on your wheel. So it's like, okay, my wheel says wipers, flash, pit, and radio. Which one of those is the number 6? I don't know. So it was a lot. There was a lot of that trying to figure out which buttons to push. There was also, I also had a problem with the wheel where I wasn't getting any force feedback, which I had to fix before I could actually play the game. So that was fun. But yeah, it just seemed, for my perspective at least, being someone who hasn't played the game with a wheel before, it seems like there's an awful lot of setup time and getting used to things that I haven't had to do in other games whenever I'm using my wheel.
Yeah, I think you're right. It when you jump around different sims, like iRacing set, of course, you mentioned a couple. When you jump, whenever I jump around and then jump back into an F1 game, it does take me longer to get back used to how the F1 games drive compared to jumping in any other sim, because all the other sims are quite close. Like, there's differences in like tire model and stuff like that, but there are fundamental differences in how the F1 game handles. And I do think your comment about certain triggers and like various details that you might feel through the wheel, I don't believe that they are communicated as effectively for F1 games, but it is important. I think the thing that F1 2021 and basically the F1 games for a long time now, I think the thing they've done brilliantly is they have balanced the appeal to mass market, i.e. people who aren't as hardcore into sim racing as we are, whilst also having enough detail and enjoyment there for the hardcore players. So you can kind of expect it to be a little like sim light. I'm not going to say Simcade, although I've just said it.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than Simcade.
Yeah, I would say it skews more to sim than arcade, for sure. Yeah. And I think
it's sim light.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, that's what F1 does brilliantly for me. And that hasn't changed since like 2016, maybe even earlier than that, is the accessibility for people to jump in and play it on a pad or a steering wheel. Yeah, there's a little bit of setup time in terms of like if you've got a more serious wheel, it can be a little tricky to get it working. But nine times out of ten, you can jump on and you can get the hang of it. And on a similar note, whilst you have jumped into this game and mainly played it on a wheel for the first time, I've actually jumped into this game and mainly played it on a controller. And that's mainly because I am boiling my off at the moment in the UK. It is so hot. So I haven't been up for using a wheel. And I think a couple of years ago, controllers were a little bit tricky with F1. And obviously with racing games, I would say that if you can get up to speed with a wheel, you will always be at least more consistent than with a pad. But I was pleasantly surprised. Like in the past, I have avoided using a pad because of how much better a wheel is. I've played the game for about 10 hours as well, most of that on a controller, and I have not been disappointed. It's quite impressive how they've managed to make it so controllable. So I think that's a definite plus.
Yeah, I might need to switch the controller, because one thing that I've been struggling to learn, at least for me, is just how quickly I can throw the wheel back and forward, because I'm not used to doing that. Because you do that in the GT car, you're going around in a circle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's such a different experience driving on this game. One thing I will comment on the wheels, however, is that for people who, like me, are lucky enough to have the SF1000 Thrustmaster wheel, like 2020, this game is supported at launch for the dash and everything, so that all works, and it works flawlessly. And now that the beta has passed, I can't see why I wouldn't be able to say this, the wheel was supported natively in the beta as well, so that was quite impressive.
Yeah.
Let's move on to probably the biggest addition to the F1 game this year, and that's
Breaking
the
Point.
The new game mode, Breaking Point.
I've been hearing a lot of different things about Breaking Point. My joke has been, why do I feel like I'm playing a Need for Speed game? Because that's what it reminds me of.
See that, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's not just because it's an EA thing, but it maybe they had a hand in it. I don't know. Probably not at this point, but it just feels like I'm playing an older Need for Speed game where you have the cutscenes with, newer Need for Speed games do this too, where you have the cutscene with the bad guy and they give you exposition about stuff and then you go race. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, it's fairly the one criticism, the major criticism I've got about Breaking Point, and yet I don't think this is something they really could have fixed because it would have ultimately changed what the game is that you don't really have any control over the story.
Yeah.
There is a story there. You take part in it, you do the racing, but if you don't meet the objective, you don't advance the story. So basically, there are no consequences for if you do badly. And there is only one storyline that kind of weaves through. You get a choice of what you say in interview questions after races, but that's fairly, like, you only really hear about that in the in-game email system or in-game phone call system if you had a specific response that the team didn't like or something. So there isn't really much choice there. But equally, because it's a sports game, there isn't really an... They were never really going to focus on, you know, a player-driven storyline. Mm-hmm. It's not like... It's not like a Mass Effect kind of game where your decisions will impact the story that you're given. It was never going to be that.
Butler will not remember that because he's not programmed to.
No. I will say I was skeptical of Breaking Point when it was first announced because it looked a little cringy. And yeah, there are parts of it that are a little cringy. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I would actually say it was very good, and I really enjoyed it. I finished Breaking Point, and for anyone out there, I know you haven't finished it. I'm sure
I have not finished it yet. No.
I won't be giving any spoilers. But it's fairly simple. I'd say the campaign covers quite a few of the sort of main stereotypical dramatic things that can happen in a racing championship. You know, you might get a puncture. What happens then? You know, you might develop a rivalry with another driver or mm-hmm. a teammate. What happens then? Well, it covers quite a lot of that.
Is there a penalty scandal that I have to look forward to?
I think it's best totally if you just not don't mention that at all.
Totally not referencing modern F1 championship at all.
It's best if we just move on, because if we go either way, we will be mobbed.
Yeah.
I would actually say that the Breaking Point pales into insignificance when it comes to the drama of the current real championship.
all the drama.
Yeah, God, that's... I can't say that. Breaking Point, yes.
Remember, you're on my show.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I would say on the whole, I did enjoy Breaking Point. And I think it was a unique thing for the F1 games.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, going forward, I don't really see where they can take Breaking Point. Because I said that it covers most of the stereotypical tropes of what could happen in a motorsport series. They've covered most of them. I don't see how they in F1 2022, for example, they could have a continuation of Breaking mm-hmm. Point. They could maybe do it for one more game, because it builds up, the story builds up to a certain thing mm-hmm. happening, and then you don't actually get to see that thing happen. You get a hint of it in the quote unquote epilogue, but you don't actually get to play any of that resulting action. So I wonder if they might bring that over to F1 2022, a continuation of Breaking Point. But I don't see them being able to milk that any longer than one more game.
Yeah.
They've covered a lot of the ground and a lot of it would end up being rehashed. And as I said, considering your actions don't really have an impact on the story going forward, there's only so much that you can do with this format. So it's a nice thing to have at the moment, but I don't see it growing into a game mode that lasts for the franchise.
Yeah, I would kind of like to see them take the extra step with Breaking Point if they're going to continue it. Just because at this point, kind of feels like we have a story in an F1 game because someone in a shareholder meeting said, hey, what if we had a story mode in the F1 game? So, like, I would like to see them go for it with, like, actual consequences. Actual, like, you can have a diverging storyline where if you decide to pass this guy on this lap, this happens. Or if you don't pass him on this lap, this happens. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Probably
one
not.
One of the early scenarios, I think I could probably talk about this one, is you are ahead of your teammate and you have to keep them behind them and ignore team orders. Mm-hmm. That could have been a good time to have it diverge. Like, either you let them by and the relationship between your teammates is more harmonious, or mm-hmm. you block them and it goes aggro. That would be the sort of thing where, if you were making a more player driven story, that would be the sort of choice that you could make right there. The other thing, I haven't played much of the other games that have this similar kind of game mode, like Madden or NFL or whatever. But it's my understanding that though the characters that are in those stories, you can then play as them in the other game modes. I'm quite surprised that, you know, you can't select the protagonists for your My Team career mode, there isn't an option to then continue the story in the traditional career mode. I think that might have been a way to, whilst the story kind of ends at this point that I've mentioned, that would be a way to maybe artificially have it continue and have it sort of carry on. I don't know. That seems like a bit of an own goal. I think that might have been something they could look into just to kind of prolong the story a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. Or, you know, F1 2022 could be... Hopefully, they don't go the completely other direction that I think they should, where F1 2022 becomes F1 Breaking Point 2 or something along those lines.
Oh, please no.
Where the game is just is just the Breaking Point storyline. But
Mercifully, I think the reactions have been mixed enough where they wouldn't hopefully devote an entire game to it. But you never know.
This is
weird. The things have happened.
This is EA we're talking about here.
I don't know. I think EA have been fairly good at of all of the developers that release yearly titles, I think EA have done the best job at it. But I think that's also because they pick the franchises where there's the biggest fan base, so a yearly model works because there's that many people that will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I still think my honest opinion would be that if you're a casual player of the F1 games and you haven't got F1 2020, then get F1 2021. If you're a casual player and you've got 2020, I wouldn't necessarily say to jump on 2021 right now.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing like maybe you'd get it when it's cheaper or something like that. Just because it's an annual release, there's not really much they can add in that short amount of time. Whereas if it was a biannual release, they'd have more time to develop the current game they have and work on the next one to make it a more attractive product. That by no means am I saying that F1 2021 is bad. It's just I think F1 continues to be shackled by the annual release. It's the same with football games. I don't play football games.
I've
seen similar criticisms from the people who play those games every year that the FIFA games don't evolve enough to be worth buying it.
Madden games definitely don't evolve enough.
No, and there's only so much you can do. When you've got a sports series, I think this more relates to the non-racing stuff like football. The sports don't evolve enough over time for there to be any radical changes. I think with motorsport, it's different because F1 in particular does evolve quite rapidly year on year.
Using your example with FIFA and the NFL and FIFA don't release every couple of years the new football model or something along those lines.
Yeah, they come along with a hexagonal football one year. I'd watch that.
Or in the Americans' case, the new football with whiter lacing. I don't know. it's a design that's been developed over the last so many years. You can't really fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not broken.
So I think that makes F1 a bit more of a prime target to do yearly releases. But even then, we've seen with a sport that constantly changes year on year. Maybe this year less than others, but next year will be much bigger.
Yeah.
I think even F1 has shown that maybe they should look at spacing out the launches a little bit further, just, to build up hype for the next one and to properly develop the current one.
If there's situations like with I almost said Breaking Point, which is not the name of the team, with Aston Martin joining the series, maybe just have an update of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, in an ideal world, what I would do is I would have a biannual release, and then at, say, the time the season starts, March, so maybe a little bit later to account for development time, say April, maybe they release that year's update. You could even charge for it. I know how much EA like doing that.
EA loves charging their consumer base.
But they could then charge, maybe say, £10 or some $10, I don't know, to get the this year's driver lineup and skins, tracks, maybe. We've seen that this year, obviously, because of the late arrival of Imola, Portimao, and Jeddah, that they're adding them post-release. Yeah. So maybe they could do that as well and release any new tracks. But having a biannual release would give them the chance to do that, so that they could, and that I think that would prolong the game's life as well. Having a 2022 update, for example, that would bring the players back, and we'd see a resurgence and maybe some more game purchases. I think that might make more sense in the long run and keep people excited about the F1 games rather than releasing them every year and us basically having the same thing. We should probably also mention, you know, the driving. And there's a reason I've kind of left this toward the end, is because it's an annual thing. It's very similar in terms of driving, both on the wheel, and the controller plays better, but it's still quite similar. And I think that's not necessarily a criticism, because the F1 cars in real life haven't really changed too much. The key difference is, like in real life, there is less downforce. There's less aerodynamic downforce on the cars, which means that, you know, some corners that you would have taken flat last year aren't now, and you can feel that, and it's good that it's there and it's reflected in the game well. As for the physics themselves, I still say it perfectly sits on the balanced line between accessible and sim, and the assists do a really good job of tailoring the experience to your level. So no complaints there from me.
Yeah, already
pretty good. So
my only real complaint, just, and maybe there's settings that I need to find to fix this, but just having a little bit more visual cue about when your car is about to spin out, maybe a louder audio cue or something, because like whenever I'm coming up to a corner and I'm pressing on the gas to get a good exit, the car all of a sudden just starts to spin, and I've had no input from the wheel whatsoever about that. So,
As we were saying earlier, I think the details are communicated not as well.
Yeah.
You kind of get used to it. Like I said, I've been playing on a wheel with F1 games since about 2016. Mm-hmm. So by now, you kind of develop an idea of when it's going to back out on you and stuff like that. But I think that's a valid point there. It does take some getting used to.
Yep.
One other thing worth mentioning compared this year to last year, I think this might well be the biggest change in terms of the driving experience, other than obviously the smaller lack of downforce, is how the curbs interact with the cars. You cannot run them as much as you did.
I've definitely noticed that.
Obviously, there are some curbs that I think they've designed them well enough where the curbs that you can run in real life, like the flatter curbs. I'm thinking of like the swimming pool chicane at Monaco, for example. You can run those curbs. However, there are other curbs, I'm struggling to name any in particular right now, where if you run them on the exit, the car will destabilize and it will spin. I actually, exit of turn... Hang on, I'm driving it in my head. 1, 2, 3, 4. Exit of turn 4 at Albert Park. There's a curb, it's sort of in a car park section. There's a curb there. If you run that too much, you will spin. And I think that is quite like real life. It's a more severe curb, and it will punish you if you run it. That's probably one of the bigger changes in terms of the actual driving experience. Is, you know, you might have to treat the curbs with a little bit more respect. And the other thing you might have to treat with a little bit more respect is the AI, because I would say the AI in F1 2021 are the best they've ever been in terms of the experience of racing them, their mannerisms, you know, how they race you.
I can't think of another game where I was behind Lando Norris coming into a DRS zone, and I got the run to go past him, and he moved over in front of me off the racing line.
Yeah. It's so rare for a game to do that and to have the AI take defensive lines. It's really quite impressive. I would say that, honestly, I would put F1's AI up there with some of the best of all sim racing.
Yeah.
To be honest. Yeah, there are still little exploits you can do with them. Like if you pinch them toward an apex or push them off of a racing line, they might back out and slow down. Mm-hmm. Unlike Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton at Silverstone.
Moving on swiftly.
I'm gonna get hate. On the whole, I would say that they race very, very well. And they've also at least from my experience, that I feel like the AI a little bit more difficult as well this year, which might help considering, you know, all the F1 esports drivers are easily beating them on the 110% difficulty because they're aliens, you know.
Yeah.
So if you're one of the aliens, I don't know, maybe you might find the AI a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
And what comes with the AI racing you harder is that it you get acquainted with the damage model. And that's another really good plus point of this game is the damage model is so good. If you have it on simulation, and I very quickly turned it off because I was not finishing at all, you know, floor damage and stuff like that, you can get that quite easily while running over. I don't know whether it's as common running over curbs. I don't know whether they've modeled that as much. Be cool to see if they did, because that's quite real. But if you have contact side by side, you might take out chunks of your floor, and that will, unlike a front wing, that will not repair on a pit stop. So you will have to lump with that for the rest of the race. Same with the rear wing. So the rear wing now can get damaged if you get rear-ended, and you can get holes in it, and you can flat out retire if you get hit on the rear wing. I think for a long time there was an idea, I don't know whether this was ever confirmed by Codemasters, but the F1 teams didn't want a good damage model in the F1 game because they didn't want their cars to be damaged, like from a PR point of view. However, I think they've changed that now, and it's very good.
Yeah, I have long heard about car companies who don't want to have their cars represented in a game with a good damage model just because of that very reason.
Isn't that why Forza's damage model isn't?
Forza was definitely one that I've heard of mentioned before.
I'm sure that F1 has as well, but I could be making that up, but that might be something that I've heard from somebody who didn't officially say it.
Yeah, so. Which is what probably I heard as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say that I've managed to damage the floor on the car that I was driving, but I have definitely ripped a front wheel off.
Oh yeah, and that's another thing. Like, they've more accurately modeled, you know, the wheels coming off and how they react with the tethers. It's just little things like that which improve the realism, and I think that's a good thing for considering it's a mass market game.
Yeah,
I think damage model was important because, you know, some people aren't going to be as good at the game. They're going to crash. At least the crashes will look realistic. You know, crashing isn't a highlight of real motorsport, but in a video game, we can have a little bit more fun with the crashes. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing.
I'm going to hold my comment about crashing not being a major part of motorsports for another time.
Let's not.
Yeah. So
we're already running the risk.
So we'll be talking about this for 28 minutes now. Final thoughts that you might have? Do you think you're going to keep playing it, or do you think this is just kind of I'm bored now because it is the same as the other games?
I think I'm biased. I've always quite enjoyed the F1 games because, as I've said, it's that perfect balance of fun and seriousness. Like, if you want to graft at it, you can, and you can get enjoyment out of it. Equally, it's a game that you can pick up and play and have good fun with for a half hour or something like that. So I think I'm going to keep playing it, not just because at some point we're going to get Imola and I will never race another track ever again. Same with Portimao. Same with Jeddah, actually. As much as I hate where it is in real life, it is actually quite a good track.
So if Codemasters pulls an audible and adds VIR...
Yeah, then I'll stop.
Okay.
It's a game that I think is fair enough. If you're a fan of the F1 franchise, you're going to like this.
Yeah.
But I would just... I would have reservations about wholeheartedly recommending it to someone who is a casual player who has last year's game and only plays it every once in a blue moon. I would probably just say to them, look, just keep playing 2020.
Yeah. But I think I'm going to continue to play this a little bit more. I think I might actually try doing it on the controller just to see if I can progress the story a little bit quickly, because literally most of my time has been just messing with settings.
I think you should stick with it, because I think once you have gotten the hang of the little idiosyncrasy, I can't say that word.
Idiosyncrasies.
Thank you. It comes to something when you're correcting my pronunciation.
I know, right?
it's been a long day. I'm hot. when you master the little things about how the game handles, it's a lot of fun on a wheel. But equally, I would recommend trying on a controller as well, because it is a satisfying enough experience on a controller as well. It's once again, it's that perfect balance of sim when you want it, accessible when you need it. Mm-hmm. It's great.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Jordan. I think we anticipated talking about this for half an hour, but we got a lot of good things out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'll bring Lewis back in to talk about your favorite subject, IndyCar.
I'm jealous.
It's okay. You guys got to cover NASCAR just a couple weeks ago that I didn't get to. So.
Yeah, but IndyCar's my favorite.
Yeah.
Don't keep
I know.
Me
up. I promise I only have a few negative comments, but we'll get to that in a second. All right. Thanks, Jordan.
No worries. See you later.
Thanks, Jordan, for joining me to record that earlier. And that we'll get Lewis back. Say hi, Lewis.
Hi.
Don't sound so enthused. Anyway, small note to add to that review that Jordan and I both forgot to mention this while we were talking about it. Codemasters actually pulled the ray tracing function from the PS5 version of the game temporarily to improve its stability. Apparently, whenever you had ray tracing enabled on the PS5, the frame rate was about as consistent as my ability to pronounce things. So, yikes.
Was that a self-zing there?
That was a self-zing.
Huh.
Yeah, I haven't noticed. Jordan and I both have noticed it on the PC versions because that's what we have, but hopefully that's something that they can get patched for the PS5 soon. But anyway, moving on to Jordan's favorite piece of news of the week, of course, and I'm assuming you also enjoy this piece of news. It has been announced this week that there will be an official IndyCar game coming up in 2023.
Oh, yes.
Yes. There was much rejoicing about that.
Oh, my goodness. It's actually long, long overdue.
I was going to say, I'm assuming you probably know this. When was the last time there was an actual dedicated from one open wheel series to the another? When was the last time there was an actual dedicated IndyCar game?
I know it was made by Codemasters. I want to say it was 2005 or 2006. I remember the cover had a three wide image from Texas at Tony Kanaan in the 7-Eleven car. Dan Weldon was in it, and I believe Scott Dixon was also in that picture from the cover. I don't know. I'd have to look it up again, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was early to mid-2000s was the last one that they had.
Yeah, I'm looking over it right now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there supposed to be some type of partnership with Slightly Mad and Project Cars 2 with IndyCar that didn't really go anywhere?
I believe they had what they called the official license. It wasn't an exclusive license, though.
Mm.
To produce the IndyCar series in Project Cars 2, and I think that carried over to Project Cars 3, which they did give the most up-to-date versions of the IndyCars at the time, whenever the games were released. But unfortunately, there was no real official tracks or anything like that. I mean, they had Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
All the other tracks were just from other licenses that they had achieved.
Yeah. I'm just doing a quick Google search about the last one. IndyCar Series 2005. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, and I think it's... Yeah. Okay, so I was close. It's actually a still shot of the Indy 500, and it's actually Dan Weldon leading Tony Kanaan in the image, and I can barely see through the next two cars in the background, but that is the front image, and 2005 was the last one that they did.
Okay. Yeah, can't say that I've ever really played any of these.
I didn't either, because I looked for these games in the stores everywhere, so I never even got to play with them.
Mm-hmm.
The closest I got to actually was in Toka Race Driver 3. They had IndyCars featured in there.
Yeah.
And it was a game that came out at the same time, so, I mean, it's probably almost the exact same racing physics and same cars.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah. Looks like it was. Oh, it was a PC, PS2, and Xbox.
Yeah. Title.
So. Yeah. Make yourself feel old.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, enough about the past. We're talking about the new one. This is the part where the news gets a little less exciting. The IndyCar game is going to be made by Motorsport Games, which we already know is going to be doing the new NASCAR game that's supposed to come out this year. Before I forget, while I'm thinking of this, they did actually tease out, I think it was Tuesday, I think, a short little video of what New Hampshire is going to look like in the new engine with using R Factor 2s. Yeah, it's like 20 seconds long.
Did that go out on Twitter, do we know?
Or? It went out on Twitter. I linked it somewhere. Yeah, there it is.
We go here.
Yeah, it's literally a 20-second video that kind of shows you what it looks like.
Okay.
It's very, very short.
It is.
You can kind of get what they're going for. It looks very much like R Factor 2.
It does.
Which should be news to no one since it's the R Factor 2 engine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, just quickly going through their press release, the system. As part of this deal, the esports license has been also given to Motorsport Games to run the official IndyCar esports series, I guess. The debut title is expected to launch in 2023 on Xbox and PlayStation consoles as well as PC. The partnership additionally includes an eSport agreement that could kick off as early as this year. Details on competitions will feature the NTT IndyCar Series athletes are expected to be announced at a later date.
Okay. So now if they say official eSports series, are they, I mean, it's all vague, but I guess we could speculate that if they're going to announce drivers, that tells me that it could be real world drivers along with some of our professionals.
The way I read that sentence as was that it would be a, like a pro invitational series like NASCAR was doing.
And how IndyCar did it for a little bit there as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the question is that going to be on iRacing or is that going to be on R Factor 2 or something along those lines?
Well, by the sounds of it, if it's going to come out on the new series, something tells me it's probably going to come on R Factor 2, mm-hmm. seeing how that would be the partnership and Motorsport Games is going to be in charge of that esports series. So why they would do it on a rival game whenever they can do it on their own wouldn't make much sense.
Yeah.
So that tells me that's also a teaser saying that new Indy cars are coming to R Factor 2.
Possibly,
that's what that tells me.
Yeah. And annoyingly, that's pretty much all we know about the new IndyCar game is that it exists pretty much.
Yeah.
There is a website that's IndyCarGame.com where you can sign up for more like their traditional, like get the latest updates on this game.
Yeah, newsletters and stuff. Yeah,
newsletter stuff, behind the scenes, and something for benefits and discounts.
Well, guess where I'm going right after the show.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah.
So something that we were also talking about before we started recording, and that's also kind of involved with the next piece of news that we're going to talk about. If all of these games, like IndyCar and confirmed NASCAR, are going to be using the R Factor 2 engine, does that mean that R Factor 2 is then going to get that content ported into it as well?
I would imagine they would.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not be at all be surprised that they were going to charge a premium for it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they put like a clause in there, for instance, like if you already own this game, for instance, if I already own the official IndyCar game and the new IndyCar comes out on R Factor 2,
yeah,
that it could potentially be free for me, which I mean, if you go through Steam, they know what content you have and what games you have, so then I'd be able to tell that way.
I mean, I think that would be a good way to do it.
It would be.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
question is, will they do it that way or not? I mean, this is just me totally spitballing at this point. But...
Yeah, same here. I can see them doing it that way. I can see them doing the traditional DLC route of, you want this on R-Factor 2? Well, you got to pay more money for it. But there's also part of my brain that's thinking about, would they actually do that though? Because if you can get that content in R-Factor 2, why would you buy the other game?
Because R-Factor 2 may not necessarily have all the official tracks.
R-Factor 2 might have all the official tracks, and probably you can't do the official esports stuff on R-Factor 2.
Probably not, at least not whenever the new game comes out.
Yeah.
So there is that.
There is that. It's just a big old question mark about what Motorsports Games is going to do. It should also probably be worth mentioning, seamlessly transitioning to the next topic of discussion. It was also announced this week that they are going to be officially Motorsports Games making the, well, it's either a WEC game or it's a Le Mans game. I've seen it referred to both in different places.
Up until this week, I've heard it being referred to as the official World Endurance Championship game.
Okay.
I'll let you carry on with the announcement, and I'll tell you what I've heard from there.
Yeah. Basically, what it's coming down to it is that, first of all, as part of the announcement, is that there will be another 24 hours of Le Mans Virtual later in the winter. Whether that means December 2021 or January, February 2022, I'm not sure yet. Apparently, we'll be finding more information about that at Le Mans next month. Motorsport.com is referring to this as a brand new Le Mans video game. It's scheduled to be released also in 2023 with the hypercar category as well. And, you know, I'm also assuming, much like I assumed with IndyCars, that this would also have the R-Factor 2 license. So, given the problematic relationship that the ACO has with people using their license, is this going to mean that, and we've talked about this on the show again, but I think it bears mentioning with this as well, because it is related, does that mean that we're going to start losing licenses in other games? Like with iRacing not being able to hold an official 24 hours of Le Mans this year, them more or less sandwiching it into a pre-existing endurance series, which seems to be the loophole that you can have a Le Mans, a 24 hours race at Le Mans as part of a series, but you can't have it as a standalone event, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you can't call it the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
And you can't call it 24 Hours of Le Mans, which...
In all honesty, the more that this gets brought up, I think it's the absolute most petty and pointless crackdown on a license thing for a name. I mean, nobody ever claims to be the official event. I mean, the event is the 24 Hours of Le Mans. I mean, for instance, whenever Toro holds a 24 Hours at Daytona, they still call it 24 Hours at Daytona, and nobody cracks down on them.
Yeah.
I mean,
we don't get threatened with cease and desist stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, in all honesty, it's the most petty thing. It's like they think that other people are trying to take over, effectively, what the name is. But, I mean, you literally break into the market and say, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. That's... You know, it's very much so a seniority thing, I would say. when it comes to making claims like that. Not so much, I mean, it's your event, you have every right to do what you want to do.
They hold the copyright to the words 24 hours Uncle Ma.
Exactly, but I mean, you just come in there and instantly start making demands. Well, people that have been around forever that have been running an event like that, they're like, well, hold on. You need to calm the heck down. You know, we're not claiming to be official, and here you are saying that we're all trying to be official. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah. And if it's just a naming convention, like, their biggest holdup on it is because it's called the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Coming up with a new name is not difficult. I did it at Torah in about 2 minutes. We literally called our race 24 Hours of Mazan, because you can't hold the copyright to a name of a town.
No.
Loophole.
Well, at the same time, Le Mans is a city.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Yeah, copyright petty, law is weird. It's just...
Yeah. So, and then another mini debate that we had inside of our chat prep was that, I can't remember who brought it up, they were wondering about licenses to other games for the content that's going to be in the game.
Yeah. I think we both agree that maybe tracks, but the cars are the ownership of the manufacturer, so the manufacturer determines that.
Well, even the tracks, not so much. Maybe the official Le Mans circuit, which is owned by the ACO, maybe that would you'd find a little bit harder. But for instance, Monza, if it was featured in the game, whoever owns Monza owns the rights to Monza. It's not simply something that's owned by the WEC. So they could still put that track out into a game, a la F1. I mean, F1's and Monza have been around since the day F1 has been ran. Yeah. So, I mean, so they can't do it that way unless the ACO officially owns the track. So the only thing I see being a crackdown is that maybe, for instance, if we see a WEC version of the Ferrari 488 inside of, let's say, a Forza, you may not see the WEC logo on it, but it might have a Forza logo on it.
Yeah. And instead, there's
stuff there's, like that.
Yeah, there's been instances since you brought up Forza directly. There's been instances where a car has been added to the game where a logo has been omitted.
Yeah.
Like for instance, I can't... The... Nine, which Porsche was it?
The 962.
Was it the Can-Am Porsche? I can't remember what the Can-Am Porsche was. Hold on.
The 91730.
I'm gonna trust your Porsche.
The pink pig.
Huh?
The pink pig. You mean?
No, it's a version of the pink pig that was in Trans Am or in Can-Am. Excuse me.
Yeah, there's two of them. There was the 91730 and the 91710.
I'm going to say, 10. That game was... Whenever that car was initially added to Forza, it had the Penske livery on it. And then a couple months later, they removed it.
Oh, then that would have been the 91730. The Sunoco one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Well, they didn't remove it. They removed all the logos, if that makes sense.
Okay, so something tells me a licensing agreement.
Yeah, some type of license agreement. The bane of esports racing everywhere, license agreements.
Yeah, but at the same time, with a game like Forza, that's not going to stop anybody from going either creating a logo and putting it on there themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which, at the same time, you can't hold a copyright for somebody who's able to freely create something like that.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you give people the tools to make custom logos, you can't really police it that much.
Yeah, I was going to say, but at the same time, I mean, people aren't making money off of it either. So
yeah, there are specific like levels of decency that people have to follow. That like Turn 10 has a list of unacceptable logos that you can't have in game, stuff like that.
Yeah, but
it's awful hard to.
Well, it's hard to police, because at the same time, if I create a logo that I strictly use for my own personal use and never take online, they're not going to know it.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway,
I was going to say, at the same time, we're talking about licensing, that people aren't making money off these things. At the same time, with anybody who runs a 24 hours of Le Mans, I mean, iRacing is technically, because you got to pay for the content in order to get there. So technically, they've already made their money off of it. So I can kind of see why the ACO mm-hmm. cracked down on them. But people like organizations like Tora or...
I mean, technically, you bought anything. The game, so they made money from it. But the Tora organization, the community or the organization running the race on that platform,
it's not making any money.
It's not making any money, yeah.
So there should be no cease and desist, if I'm not mistaken, on that particular part.
Loopholes upon loopholes upon loopholes.
Yeah.
Welcome
That's
to the
what this show's about.
Yeah. Welcome to the Simcast show. I almost said the wrong show.
You almost did. That's a half dollar in the coin
that's
jar
a half
there.
In the coin jar. Welcome to the Simcast show, where we do occasionally talk about licensing agreements and copyright laws.
And loopholes.
If I can bring us back around, if it is just a Le Mans game, maybe they can start adding some classical content to it as well.
That would be awesome.
But hopefully they don't decide to do what Codemasters did with F1 2021 and not include it.
No.
Yeah, but Jordan expressed his displeasure a little bit more than what we recorded earlier. So, yeah. But anyway, so we're not being a dead horse and talking about this the rest of the show. As we are coming down the last couple minutes here, tell us what you think. Do you think I'm not going to say anyone in particular. Do you think that we're going to start seeing licenses for certain content being changed as we know it? Do you think that stuff is going to become exclusive than what it has before? Or do you think that nothing's really going to change? It's just going to be different. I am struggling with words tonight. Is it just going to be different experiences on different types of platforms? Which, if you want my opinion, if I have a vehicle that I'm trying to sell, or if I have a racing series that I'm trying to promote, getting it on so many platforms, I think, would be a smart thing. But anyway.
More exposure.
So tell us what you think. Hashtag SimcastRSL if you want to share your thoughts.
And if you want Louis to shut the heck up, go ahead and tweet that too.
Not going to touch that one. well, I don't want Louis to shut up right now because I want you to talk about Art Factor 2.
What about Art Factor 2?
Monza. Mm. There was an update to Monza, was there not?
There was, and it was a rather large update too. Firing up my PC this afternoon before we fired up the show, and I was doing a long update, and actually it just finished updating right as we went on air. So Monza's been out for a little bit, and actually, if you remember a couple of shows ago, I talked about driving the new Formula Pro car around Monza, which I seem to have corrected myself here without consulting Ben on this one. I was under the impression that we got the full Grand Prix circuit and the old Grand Prix circuit with the banking as well, but mm-hmm. looking at it, I realized that that was not the case once I opened up the game. But we did get an update of what they call the... oh my goodness, I just drew a blank on names there. I had to pull up the actual link there and get the actual name here.
Junior Circuit and the
yes.
Grand Circuit?
Yeah, the Curva Grande Circuit.
Curva Grande, yeah.
Yeah, so the Curva Grande is literally the Grand Prix, current Grand Prix circuit without the first chicane. So you just flow right by that and get top speed going into the first corner. Mm-hmm. And then the junior circuit is just that. It's the one that basically turns right just before you get to the first chicane. And it cuts through the woods a little bit and then puts you right onto the back straightaway right where the Ascari chicane ends. And then you go down and take Parabolica and that's a lap.
I've never liked that layout.
No, I haven't either. I think it's a poor excuse for a junior circuit.
Mm-hmm.
just my personal opinion, because there's really no challenge to it. I mean, you mash the brakes maybe once in a lap. Unless they put the little chicane right before the start-finish line, then you do it twice.
Yeah.
So, because if you're using a junior circuit, you got a car that doesn't have a ton of top speed, and you can usually just lift through Parabolica and roll through it without using brakes. So, I mean, that, at least that's my experience based off of Project Cars 2.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've driven the track, and I don't intend on driving it anywhere else.
Yeah. My most experience with it has been on Forza, and mainly it because it's Forza. My experience has also been someone slamming to the side of me in turn one and sending me into a tire wall. So,
yeah, it's very easy to do that there as well, because you go from super wide Grand Prix circuit to super narrow, might as well be a foot trail.
Yeah. Yeah. So was that all that they added into the update, or was there other things?
That was just literally it on the update. I haven't had a chance to look at graphics or anything, because we had already started the show, so wasn't going to have race car noises blasting in my ear while trying to understand you at the same time.
Yeah.
That would have been fun.
Yeah, I'm looking at the press release now. They've updated cut detection on the main layout, replaced a few tree types, and some minor foliage updates.
Okay, so the topography has changed, got it.
Yeah, reduced crowd density and practice sessions.
Which actually, quick tangent on here, that I happen to notice that fairly recently on R-Factor 2, they've been doing it on a lot of tracks. If you do a full weekend on the practice weekends, you still get spectators lining the track, but there's not a lot. And on qualifying, there's a little bit more. On race day, the sides of the track are packed, which I think is a cool little immersion feature.
That is a cool little immersion feature. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't look like there's anything really, like, there wasn't any holes in Monza that they needed to patch or anything like that. So
no, it just looks like it's a refinement, I would say.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So, yeah, well, for instance, fix AI car behavior swapping lanes on rolling starts, which I've had that before. And if you hit, mostly whenever I've had this feature, there's a wonderful thing where if you don't want to do the formation lap, you can hit the space bar. It skips it to where you have a rather quick rolling start up to the finish line. Mm. On a couple of tracks, the cars right before you get control will effectively ghost, and they'll merge into each other and switch lanes right at the last second as they're coming to the green flag, which is whenever you take control, and then they won't collide again, but it's just weird to look in your mirror and all of a sudden you see everything changing directions on you.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so if you enjoy Monza and R-Factor 2, be sure to check out those two circuits. That does it for Sim Racing News this week. It's time for the Esports Roundup of the Week.
Esports Roundup of the Week!
Yep. We only really have one. It's going to be talking about the series that we are supporting on Tora, the Tora TASCAR Forza series. Round two at Road America was not short on excitement, with battles developing throughout the field behind the leaders. Overall, EXR Unfolded would be the only car to qualify in the 202s, and would go on to victory relatively unchallenged. Last week's Lobby B winner, DTS Me 212, would come home in second, with Elmore Critical in third. I would be entangled in a race-long battle with my Tour Vice President, Ted Toker, managing to run him down in the last 8 laps of the race. SFM Ace would take victory in B Lobby, and EXR Rusty would be visiting the winner's circle in Lobby C. The series continues next week at Watkins Glen. And as usual listeners are aware, Jordan usually leaves some type of editorial whenever he writes these esports roundups. So this week he wrote something to the effect of, it sounds like the NASCAR esports series is not as exciting as ours. Shots fired.
That's more than shots fired, man. That's a bazooka.
Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. Matt and Jordan will be back next week with their particular brand of off-topic discussion. This has been the Simcast episode 28? Are we in 27? Hold on. What episode are we on?
I think we're back on odds again. George's going to dream us a new one for this one anyway, so.
Yeah. I was meant to look for the show. We're on episode 27. Gosh darn it.
Okay. There we go.
That about does
it. We know, Jordan. Leave us alone.
Yeah, that about does it for all of us here at the Simcast for this week. Remember, wash your hands, wear your mask, get the vaccine, and have a good week.
Eat more tacos.
Eat more tacos.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.